You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 101 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Jess once again. Welcome back, Jess.
Thank you.
Now, in the last part, we talked mainly through your story and sort of right from the beginning through to sort of, well, now, I guess. But it was sort of mainly a big overview of your story, of everything that's happened. And if you haven't heard Jess's story, please go back and listen to episode 99. There's a lot of things in there, but I guess from kind of why we're doing a second part, there's so many things I don't think we quite had time to cover. And certainly I had a lot of questions to ask, just because it's not your typical story. It's really kind of, and there's so many things that attach themselves to Hirschsprung's that people don't necessarily think about. I know we talked a little bit last time about PTSD and about how that's affected you kind of going forward. But one thing we didn't really touch on was sort of stomas and sort of the community around stomas, because you've found, well, since you've had your stoma, you've found lots of connections and friends, I think, haven't you?
Yeah.
So it's having that community. How has that helped?
It made me feel more normal in this abnormal state, if that makes sense. I mean, the only person that I do speak to now with the bag is my friend, my one friend Josh, and we've stayed friends since we were 9 all the way up until now. We still talk, and it just feels nice to have someone that I can message and go, this has happened, what do you think it is? Or I feel a bit off, like, what do you think? Or just like being able to talk about it, it makes me feel less alone. Because stomas, yes, they are more common now than what they used to be, but you still don't run into a person with a stoma bag every day. So it feels kind of like a security thing that I'm not alone and that I do have someone that I can talk to with a bag, especially around my age, because whenever I tell people, oh, I've got a bag, they go, oh yeah, my grandma's got one, or yeah, my mum's got one. And I'm like, that's lovely, but I don't feel like I can relate so much to someone who's a bit older, whereas like I can relate to my friend because we're going through the same thing at the same time, and we can talk about the struggles that we had in school or growing up, you know, the whole tween thing. And it just makes my own feelings feel a bit more validated as well, and that I'm not just being like focusing on the first world problems, and that I am not alone, and that there are other people in this situation, and it's okay to feel like that. Because, you know, having a stoma bag isn't the norm for most people, but it's the norm for me, and that's what's important.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head there with community and about trying to find people your age with stomas. Obviously, it is tricky. And when people say, oh, well, I know someone who's, you know, a lot older, a lot younger with stomas, it's really quite difficult to relate to that because you're not going to be doing the same things in life. So to have, and I guess that's where social media is really quite important. And I know social media gets a lot of flack, but it is really, really important, because trying to find people who have stomas, like as we talked a little bit off air, you can walk down the street and they could be people with stomas walking towards you, walking past you, and you won't know that they have stomas, in the same way that someone will see you and they don't know you have a stoma. So trying to find people and trying to make those connections is really, really important, but also quite tricky as well. And have you sort of, is that the way you've kind of found people through social media, or is it through sort of the Karen's charity, or is it, how have you sort of found people?
So I met my friend Josh through Karen, because we were both in Southampton Hospital at the same time, getting ours done at the same time. So I remember she introduced us just after we had ours done. And we just immediately just became friends, because I remember I was laying on my bed and he was opposite the room, and I was like, look at my bag, this is Steve. And he was like, look at mine, this is Billy Bob. And you know, it was just really refreshing to have someone in the exact same place as you and hit off from there. And we've been friends now for 10 years. So, and yeah, we don't talk as much as like your typical best friend would, but we know that we can rely on each other. And that we are there because we understand everything. And I think that's what's so refreshing, is knowing that you've got a support system there, but you're not joined at the hip with each other.
Yeah. Because I guess when it comes to talking about stomas and whatnot, you can talk to doctors, you can talk to nurses, and they're fantastic and they're brilliant. But they will talk to you, I guess, in a very clinical sense, in a time kind of, this is what the stoma does, this is how it's formed, these are the creams, these are the bags and whatever. But very few people will be able to talk to you about how it is to live with a stoma bag, you know, day to day. Because again, as good as doctors and nurses are, they can't, unless they have it, they can't really talk to you about it, can they?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of, it's quite good, really, to just have that community and have people who can kind of say, right, you know, this is how it is for me, this is what I'm doing, this is, you know, whatever it might be. And like you said, you've had your stoma for quite a while now and call it Steve, but you did sort of go between two names, if I'm right.
Yeah, it was ileostomy Ian or stoma Steve. My colostomy when I was 4 was called colostomy Colin. So we love a good name, because I just like, if the reason why I named it, bear in mind the fact I'm 9 and I came up with this and it stuck with me, is because if I am going to live with this for the rest of my life, I want to give it its own persona, because it is a part of me and it's something that, whether or not I like it, I'm stuck with it. And I may as well make light of the situation in a way I can. And also, it helps me to process it, knowing, okay, Steve's not very well. But then also, instead of going, my stoma bag is really irritated, if I just go, Steve's irritated, my friends, my family, my partner know exactly what I'm on about. And also, so does Karen, because she knows I call him Steve. And so do my surgeons. They don't refer to it as the stoma. They refer to him as Steve, because that's just what has stuck.
I love that, though, because it almost makes, yeah, like you said, the situation lighter and the situation more human, I guess, if you give someone or something a name rather than sort of saying my stoma bag or whatever it might be.
I feel like a lot of my life has been surrounded around medical terms, and it's just nice to give something that's referred to as a medical term a name, a comical name, that, you know, when I tell new doctors or something, they have a giggle, and it's not just all morbid or this is the clinical way we're going to go about it. It just adds a bit of humor into the situation, which is how I handle situations as well. Like, I can't process everything when it's all serious. Like, there needs to be a level of humor with my doctors to be able to get on board with it, to understand that they see me and my bag as a person and not just another person on the operating table or taking up one of their beds. Like, it makes you stand out a bit more as well and feel more seen.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of explaining it. And it's because it can get very easy to be defined by a condition or conditions. And you go, oh, well, I'm such and such and I have Hirschsprung's, you know, rather than going, I'm such and such and I do this and I do that and my talent is this and whatever. It's very, very easy to be, I guess, with a condition like Hirschsprung's, to be a little bit all-consuming as well. And it can sort of, because it can, you know, as you said, it is lifelong. You know, at the moment, there is no cure. But that doesn't mean that you can't be successful and go and live a very happy, healthy, you know, fulfilling life. So I think that's something that I think is really important to take away as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I said from a very young age, with everything medical-wise that's going on, I said to you earlier that I grew up very quickly. But I told myself when I was younger that, you know, this is your life. This is what you've got to deal with. So make the most of it and make your story memorable, which is another reason why I named my bag, because a doctor can walk into a room and see a patient with Hirschsprung's disease, but they won't walk into a room every day and see a 19-year-old girl with Stone Steve. Like, it makes your case more memorable, and it, in some way, I find that it makes the case, they tend to listen to you a little bit more and think of you more as a human than a patient as well. And that, I've found, has really helped them when I'm in the hospital to listen to me and to actually take on board what I'm saying and appreciate what I'm saying, because I'm not a medical professional at all. But at the same time, I know my body and I know when something's wrong and when something's not. No matter what, if my blood's come back clean, no matter what, if I'm not throwing up, but I've got a blockage. Like, when people listen to you and actually take on board what you're saying, it just makes the process so much easier. And by having that humor, it allows people to actually take on board what you're saying.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, there's something I talk about a lot on here. There's a lot of people that I talk to are mothers of children with Hirschsprung's, and quite often they are not ignored necessarily, but their concerns are sort of put to one side a little bit, and like, oh, well, you know, it can't be Hirschsprung's because Hirschsprung's is so rare, et cetera, et cetera. But one thing I don't talk about probably often enough is the person with Hirschsprung's and their intuition, because that, I think, is something. And I know you talked about in the last episode about the blockage and saying to the hospital, look, I have these symptoms. I know what's about to happen. I can't prove that it's happened because it hasn't happened yet, but it's about to happen because X, Y, and Z has happened and I've had those symptoms. And then being sort of dismissed or in a way is really not good at all. But people need to take into account not just mother's intuition, but also when it comes to especially chronic illness like Hirschsprung's, patient intuition. because, as you said, you know your body better than anybody else. I mean, it's again, with Hirschsprungs being lifelong, you grow up with the condition. It's not like we're diagnosed, well, apart from very extreme cases, it's not like we're diagnosed later on in our life, like you might be with IBD or Crohn's or IBS or something like that. We've grown up with this. We know how things feel when they're right, and we know how things feel when we're wrong. But I think having patient intuition is something that's also really important as well.
Yeah, my patient intuition has been with me from a very young age. I used to tell my mum something's not right, and my mum would know that something is wrong because I knew my body from day dot. And even now, sometimes I overthink it, but that's because of the trauma. But when something is wrong, I know what is about to happen. I know when a blockage is going to happen, and I can tell from the smallest twinge that it is. Like, I can tell right now that I do have one, but it hasn't built up as much to be a case of divergent colitis because it's still in the early stages. But I know that I have one. And I think that's what doctors don't understand, is that because I'm not displaying the symptoms as of yet, I can feel that they are going to happen because I know every twinge in my body and what it means when it comes to my Hirschsprungs and my stoma bag. And I can just tell immediately. And people just don't understand that as much. Like, it's just my intuition with my health over the years has gotten better, and I know what I'm on about now. And even when I was 9 and telling that doctor, like, I've got a blockage, and she's like, no you don't, I'm 9 and I'm telling you that I do, and then you run the tests and go, actually, yeah, you have got a build up. And surely that tells you something, that at that age I could tell, and 10 years down the line I know my body even better now. And I can tell before it even gets to the stage of hospitalization. So, yeah.
We know, and I think we as Hirschsprungs people are quite sensitive to that kind of stuff as well. We can, and often I say this as well, and I don't know if it's the same with you or anybody else, but in terms of dealing with pain, we often, because we've been through so many surgeries, we've been through so many procedures, and we've felt, you know, lots of pain in our lives, we tend to be a lot better, or our pain threshold tends to be a lot higher than everybody else in the world, just because of the procedures we've been through. Is that something similar with you?
Pain tolerance is through the roof, honestly. I mean, I've got so many tattoos and piercings because I can handle it based off of everything that life has thrown at me. That is nothing compared to my health condition, surgeries, procedures, everything that I've gone through. It just, my pain tolerance is immaculate, I must say.
Yeah, it takes an awful lot for us to, like, we could break various bones and have a lot of things that would send people into screaming fits because it would just really hurt. But for us, no, we just kind of, it takes an awful lot, which is why, again, when you, I kind of go back to the first episode and we talk about the divergent colitis in 2020, and he said, I was screaming in pain. One of my thoughts there was, well, people with Hirschsprungs have higher pain tolerance, so that must have been horribly painful for you to be not only in pain, but like really screaming out as well.
I mean, my doctors compared it to labor and delivery. So, I mean, I've got such a high pain tolerance, but that was the most excruciating pain I have ever been in. It felt like I had 10 knives being stabbed into my abdomen and everything was just bleeding out, and like my body, all the muscles just like started to go into shock. And yeah, that was excruciating, which is something considering how high of a pain tolerance I have.
Yeah. I mean, that is unbelievable that you didn't go into some sort of, you didn't have so much pain that you end up going into shock effectively, don't you? And I know you said you were very, very close to septic shock, but it just, yeah, the pain tolerance is something that is really, really interesting. I don't know whether there's ever been a study done on pain tolerance and Hirschsprung specifically, probably not, but it would be very interesting. Very, very interesting to know.
I hope that one day they do carry that out and see how people with bowel disorders and pain tolerance are, because I feel like people with bowel disorders generally do have a high pain tolerance, and it would be interesting to see the results of it. So hopefully one day someone carries that out and we can talk about that.
Yeah, well, I do, because I get messages from doctors. I had a message the other day from a guy, a doctor at Great Ormond Street, who said, always listen to a few episodes of the podcast. So if you're listening, then we'll do the study. Me and Jess will take part. We'll go through a lot of pain for you. We'll do it.
We'll do it.
But it's interesting as well, when we talk about pain and we talk about gut health. But gut health and the link to the brain is also something that is so, so important. I know we talked a little bit about autism and bipolar in the last episode, but I know that you kind of feel strongly in the same way that I do, that gut health and brain health are also really linked as well.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena-sensitive care pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena-sensitive care pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, I believe that they go hand in hand completely, and they both affect each other. Brain health can affect your physical health. Like, if I get really stressed out, my stomach will stop working, or I will just start to get the same pains that I would as if I had a blockage. But I know it's not a blockage, it's just the same pains. But then at the same time, if I have a blockage, say, or I am in pain physically, then it affects mental health as well, because then I go into shock and I'm like, oh my God, something bad's happening, or I get really upset, or it triggers PTSD. So they both go hand in hand with one another. And I think that that is so overlooked, because mental health and physical health is still health, and it is still health conditions. And neither one should be looked down upon, because they were equally as important as one another.
Yeah, just because you can't see something, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Exactly. It's like a invisible disability. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And that is the exact same thing with mental health. Just because it's not physically displayed doesn't mean it is any less important.
Yeah, very, very true indeed. And then another subject that you brought up in the last episode, sort of genetics-wise, with Hirschsprungs. And again, it kind of... There's plenty of people I talk to who they display symptoms of Hirschsprungs, and they're then, or they have a family history of Hirschsprungs, but they're still then not diagnosed with Hirschsprungs, or they don't kind of, doctors and nurses don't really necessarily look for it, despite there being a family link. And you touched on it in the last episode, we didn't quite have time to sort of go into it. But there is a family link to Hirschsprungs with you as well, isn't there?
Yes. So my dad had Hirschsprung's disease. I'm not aware that anyone in the family tree before him had it, but I know that he did, and he wasn't as severe as what my case was. He had to pull through a temporary colostomy bag and everything. And I was saying to you earlier that I drew the short straw, because my brother, my older brother, doesn't have Hirschsprung's disease. But I do, which defeats all odds, because one, I'm a girl and we tend to get it less than males. And two, because I'm the second born. So you would have expected the Hirschsprungs to be more prominent in the firstborn child of a parent with the hereditary Hirschsprungs condition. So very confusing family link, but... Yeah, that is the only person in my family that I'm aware of that has Hirschsprung's disease as well.
Yeah, that's so strange how it bypasses, because anybody who knows my story knows that I'm second born as well. And I mean, it was slightly, my older brother doesn't have Hirschsprung's, which again, I'm very glad none of my brothers do. My two younger brothers don't have Hirschsprung's either. But there's a lot of people I talk to who are second born and who have Hirschsprungs, and I do, again, it's 3 in every 4 is the given terminology of people that have Hirschsprungs are male. So to be second born, then be a sort of 1 in 4 of 1 in 5,000, whatever that is maths-wise, I don't know. It's a lot. But whatever that is, it's just... the chances, and that's where I do sort of have some sympathy with doctors and nurses, because they do kind of go, well, it's such a small chance. It could be anything and everything else, but it's such a small chance that the child has Hirschsprungs. But it is, there's a lot of second born children who have Hirschsprungs, which again, I don't know if that's a thing at all. No idea.
No idea. I hope though that at some point it gets studied to see what is more likely. Is it more likely that firstborn or secondborn is more likely to have Hirschsprung's disease, or if there even is a link at all, or if it's just genetics and the randomness that they can be sometimes with conditions. I find that really interesting though, that you're also secondborn and have it. And I wonder if there's more people like you and me that have the same family pattern, and why that is.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few people just off the top of my head that I've interviewed. In fact, the two actors I've interviewed, Zoe Colletti and Louis Healy, they're both second born. Zoe's the similar situation to you, and the fact that she is second born, has an older brother, she's obviously female, has Hirschsprungs. You know, it's very odd how that happens. And I understand that there must be a link to a certain extent, because again, a lot of people I talk to, it does sort of run in the family, but then there's an awful lot like me where it doesn't, and nobody else on either side of my family. So it's, genetics is something that fascinates me, and I think it always will, ever since I started this. And speaking to every doctor and nurse and people that I know, when we talk about genetics, they sort of give a similar answer. Is mostly, you know, we know this and this, but we don't really know all of it. And I think that's just going to be the way it is for
a while.
But hopefully in however many years, when I'm long retired from doing this podcast, we'll eventually have found out a reason as to why things happen. But your story, I know we touched on a little bit in the last episode, but there's so many other parts to your story that's not just Hirschsprung's. And I guess one of the main underlying currents of this podcast is kind of showing people that, yes, you may have Hirschsprung's, you may have other associated conditions, but you can still be very successful. You can still be, you know, still do normal jobs. You can still relationships, etc., etc. But there is something that you're working on at the moment to do with nail tech. Am I right in saying that?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yes, so I was working in an office, and unfortunately, with my health, I took some time off, and they weren't very supportive at all. They suggested I do a phase return. Spoke to my doctor, he wrote a phase return. I gave it to them, and they were like, "We can't accept this." And I was like, "Why? You suggested it." They're like, "All the summer temps have gone. We need you to work full time again." And I'm like, "But I'm not ready. I'm still not feeling very well. I need to come back part time for the time being." No, we can't do that. So I was like, "Right. If you can't support what I need and what my doctor recommends, I cannot work with you." So I stopped working there, and I've had a thing for nails anyway, because I enjoy doing my own and I like the creativity, because I'm quite a creative person. And I just thought to myself that with my condition and the unreliability of it, if I was my own boss and I am self-employed, I don't have to be dictated to by a company, and I can work with myself and my needs. So I am doing my course at the moment. I'm training, and by the end of October, I will be fully qualified nail technician, but I will be self-employed, my own business. And it feels like just a weight has been lifted off my shoulder, because now I am, obviously I need to be reasonable because I still need to make a living, but I am my own boss now, and I am not having my needs subjected to by a big company that only see me as a figure. And that was really important to me, because it made me realize that although it's scary doing my own business now, I also feel so much more secure knowing that I am not going to be belittled, but because of my needs. Because even before my office job, I was working in a supermarket, and even then they weren't very supportive as well at times. Like, I asked to go home at one point because I had a cold, and when I get like a cold or something, it doesn't affect me, it affects my stoma bag to the point where my bags won't actually stick to my skin, so I physically can't be lifting things and being in a supermarket working when my bag won't stick to me. So I told them that, and they had a big go at me, telling me that this is ridiculous and I need to get it under control. And I'm like, it's literally not my fault, but okay. And it's just those two experiences, because they've been my only two jobs. And I was just like, I know that not a lot of people understand this condition, but at the same time, I still need support whether you understand it or not. And that's when I just realized that being self-employed was probably the best thing for me to do, so that I don't run into those situations again. And so far, it's working out for the better.
I'm really glad to hear that. But it's understanding, isn't it? And no, not every employer, probably every employer, by and large, is not going to understand when you mention the word Hirschsprung's disease and you say, oh, I have Hirschsprung's. Nobody's going to understand that, and I don't expect them to, you know. But then when you start talking about symptoms like the bag's not sticking, well, you need the bag to stick in order to, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, to be able to work competently. Again, it doesn't take if you explain that to an employer, it doesn't take a genius for them to work that out, you know, that, oh, actually, that's, you know, I mean, stomas are not massively uncommon. I think it's one every 200. I think that might just be a UK figure, have stoma. So they're pretty prominent around the world, and especially around the UK. So you might not understand what a stoma is or how it works, and that's fine, but probably have half an idea of what it is and what it does. And to know that if it's not performing as it should, then, you know, again, it's you knowing your own body and other people telling you that you don't, which is really, really wrong.
Yeah, it was a horrible situation. Both situations were horrible to be in. And I think the problem is that because, although stoma bags are becoming more recognised now in society, not everyone still knows what they are. And don't get me started on Hirschsprung's disease, because no one has a clue what that is. So I think the fact that I've got two very serious components of my life that not a lot of people know about, it makes it difficult for me to work for a company because they don't understand the extremity of my needs, which is why I came to the decision that self-employed was probably the right thing for me to do. But I'm not saying that people with Hirschsprung's or stoma bags can't work for companies, because you definitely can. But in my own story, it didn't work for me, unfortunately. But then again, I've got a stone bag to look out for, Hirschsprung's disease, diversion colitis that reoccurs, and many other factors, including mental health. And that's why I couldn't work for a company or a big chain. But people definitely can. But just in my story, it didn't work for me. And that's completely okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's finding what works for you, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it is a real shame that health in that particular scenario. I know there are a lot of companies that do that are really, really good, and they, you know, really treat employees well, and understand that they may not understand the intricacies of the condition, but that, you know, if their employee says, "I'm not well," and this is the reason why, they, you know, make provisions for it. But it is still a shame that in this day and age, we're still kind of having to explain to people as to, you know, this is this and I can't do my job because of this, or I'm trying to, but it's going to be really difficult. And then the employer saying, well, effectively, get on with it. I don't really care. Just in a more sort of flowery sense.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah. But it, hopefully, again, as time goes on, we might get to a point where hopefully everybody, you know, is a lot more understanding of each other, I think is what we're looking for.
Hopefully, yeah. Hirschsprung's is obviously a very difficult thing to deal with, but I think it's important for people to understand that it's a big factor of your life, but it doesn't define you or limit what you can do in life. Like, there are many things that people didn't think I could do because I have a bag or because I have Hirschsprung's disease, when in actual fact I did, like being able to play rugby for 5 years, or I was able to go on school trips, which without my bag I wouldn't have been able to have done because I couldn't move off my bed or the sofa or anything. Being able to go abroad and have a holiday. It's simple things like that that people don't realise is such a difficult thing for us to do. But at the same time, being able to do it is such a huge achievement, and you shouldn't limit yourself and be like, I can't do that because I've got Hirschsprung's, or I can't do that because I've got back. As long as you take the right precautions, you can do anything you want. It doesn't define you at all. It's just a part of who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, it's finding, yeah, I precaution is one of the big things. You know, prepare, probably not precaution, prepare is probably a better way of putting it. And for people being, you know, aware of their condition, absolutely. Know about your condition, brilliant. But to not say, well, actually, this is who I am, and, you know, I can't do anything because of this or that or the other. And I understand everyone's different, but that was one of the reasons through why I wanted to set this up, and especially why I wanted to talk to you as well, because it's finding, you know, people who go, actually, I've achieved this, I've achieved that, even though I've been through, you know, if anyone's listened to part one, a lot, I'll put it that way. And if you haven't listened to part one, please go and listen to part one, because it's a wild story, isn't it? It's a wild story. But does it feel like, I know it's slightly off topic here, but does it feel like a wild story to you now that you sort of retold it? Or is it just kind of like, well, it happened to me, and, you know?
It is a wild story, and sometimes it does make me giggle how much I've gone through, just because I'm like, wow, I've gone through so much and I'm still here carrying on and I'm still alive, and it makes me really grateful. And, you know, at the end of the day, stuff happens, but that's my story and I'm proud of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's an excellent point for us to wrap up on. And I know I didn't do this in the previous part one, but now obviously you are showcasing a lot of your work on sort of TikTok and whatnot. So where can people find you, keep up to date with everything that's going on?
Either TikTok or Instagram. It's normally JessHarris05, really.
Fantastic. Nice and simple to remember.
Nice and simple.
Well, thank you so much for doing two episodes. It has been a pleasure to meet you and to listen to your story. And I'll say exactly the same as I said in the first part. I wish you the very best with the new business and, of course, your health.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.